Welcome to It's More Than That.
The current climate in our country, we tend to label people. And it's more than that because we are human beings with feelings, with stories.
It's More Than That is a podcast by the University of Minnesota Duluth. I'm Paula Peterson. Often we don't understand the full story of someone's reality. Join me as we explore the complexities of the human experience. This week on the show, Susanna Pelayo Woodward. Well, I want to just start by welcoming Susanna Pelayo Woodward to our inaugural podcast, Campus Climate Podcast. Thanks so much for your willingness to be here, Susanna. And you really did start this whole campus climate. So I'm excited to have you on the show and talk to you in more detail, not only about your own story, but about what UMD has now as campus climate. So thanks for being here.
Thank you for the invitation.
So we want to start by just getting a sense of who you are, what your role is at UMD, and then just also a sense of how you came to be here. How'd you come to UMD? Where are you rooted right now? Where would you consider home for yourself?
Well, again, my name is Susanna, and I'm the Assistant to the Chancellor for Inclusive Excellence and Director of the Office of Diversity and Inclusion. And, I actually went to UMD as a student. I am originally from Mexico and immigrated here as a young woman, and originally went to Ely, Minnesota to work. And long story short, I was very fortunate to be able to attend UMD and get a scholarship and did my undergraduate and my graduate degree here. And left for a little while. I went to Minneapolis and worked with the study abroad there. But my heart really was in working with underrepresented students. My master's thesis was on, I'm very interested in looking at the equity gap of, I started with looking at the equity gap about Chicano students mainly. But that brought me to ask the questions, what about all of our underrepresented students that are missing from the classrooms in higher education? So I decided that I wanted to pursue a career in working specifically with Latino Chicano students. And so I was actually the first coordinator that was hired at UMD to fulfill that position.
So I know you. Proud to call you a friend and colleague. And I love your story, and wonder if you'd be willing to even back up a little bit and, you know, what brought you to Ely and what it was like for you to move from Mexico City to Ely, Minnesota.
Yeah, big change, that's for sure. Well, when I was in Mexico, I was involved in scouting. Mm-hmm. And Mexico had co-ed scouting, not like in, you know, here I think it just became co-ed in the last couple of years. And I was a very active scouting. And I attended a meeting where it just happened that I attended the meeting. It was a national meeting, and there was a representative from the United States, the scouts of the United States, mm-hmm. recruiting people to come and work here during the summer. So in the summers, they bring people from all over the world to work in the different summer camps. So I did apply for the position, and I never thought that I would get the job. You know, I remember my mom said, well, just apply. You know, the only thing you, what can you lose? Mm-hmm. And I did apply for the job, and I was able to come here and work for a summer. During that summer, I met the director and his family of the base, Sandy Bridges and Cherry Bridges, and we became friends. And they had just adopted some children from Colombia. His family, they adopted 3 children. And they asked me if I wanted to come back and maybe live with them and be home when the kids were arriving from school. And in exchange that, probably I could go to school and improve my English. Because in Mexico, I studied to become a secretary. Mm-hmm. I wasn't a very good one, but. And so that's how I think that at that time when I was in Mexico, I really never saw myself as a feminist or as someone like a change maker. But I was very active in my community and creating an environment for young kids to be able to leave the city and go hiking and climbing. Mm-hmm. And actually, rock climbing was my favorite sport when I was there. Mm-hmm. And going camping. And so that really gave me a lot of satisfaction, especially working with young girls. And we were given a curriculum. I mean, at that time, I was myself a child, too. But we were working with young kids between the ages of 6 to 14. So, and I don't know, I always also wanted to go to school. And so when I got that opportunity to come learn English, I figured, you know, that's another asset that I could hopefully then get a different job and hopefully a better job in Mexico. Mm-hmm. And I came back the following year. So we're talking, I was here in summer of 83, went back to Mexico, came back the summer of 84, and thinking that I would be here only for 6 months. And actually 6 months, you know, turned into a year. When I was in high school, one of my teachers asked me what I wanted, because I went to high school at East High School, so that way I could learn English and you know, be able to go to school. And one of my professors asked me what I was going to do. And I said, well, I'm going to go back to Mexico. And he said, why don't you go to college? And then I said, oh, I don't have any money. And he said, well, there's scholarships, so maybe, and he brought me to UMD. So I, you know, I always think about that question, what are you going to do? And he taking the time to walk me to UMD and introduce me to, at that time, Bruce Rutherford, that was working, he was the advisor for international students. And he told me, you know, it's very competitive, but apply.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing that my teacher said, you know, what do you lose by applying? And so I did apply for the scholarship and very thankful that I was able to get the scholarship. And my first year, I changed my major, I think, like four times. But until I decided to, I ended up majoring in political science and international studies.
Okay. Our campus climate campaign, which this podcast is part of, and we're excited to launch it. It's more than that. And we are going to interview Blackbird Revolt and Jordan Moses and Teresa Moses, who are the designers and creators of that campaign. It's more than that. One of the questions that we want to make sure that we ask all of our guests is just thinking about, for you and your own mm-hmm. story, what's your It's More Than That?
Well, for me, I was thinking about this question this morning and what is more than that. And I think today, because everything, you know, is more than that, who I am as a person. But, you know, you hear an accent. I told you I was from Mexico and I'm an immigrant. The current climate in our country, we tend to label people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more than that because we are human beings with feelings, with stories.
Mm-hmm.
And now I always tell people, you know, most people in who would like to leave their home country, the people that you love, the food,
mm-hmm.
be able to express yourself in the language where people could understand you. Sometimes it's just out of desperation.
Yeah. It's not a choice that people make lightly. Yeah. Yeah.
So, and with that question, you know, I thought about it this morning. And I thought, yeah, I'm an immigrant, but I'm more than that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a complex individual that I'm very proud of where I come from. You know, I love Mexico, but I have also lived here more than my adult life.
Hmm.
I think I have lived here more years than in Mexico.
Wow.
So, I love Duluth. I love this community. I know many of my colleagues, sometimes when they come here and move from different parts of the United States, they say, this is a very difficult place. Can't believe you have stayed here such a long time. but I really have learned to love the cold and this beautiful lake. And I think as an indigenous woman from Mexico, there is also a connection to this is indigenous land. Mm-hmm. It is not my land. My ancestors are, you know, from another place. But there's something about my soul that connects me with this space. Mm. Yeah.
Sure.
And I also want to acknowledge that, you know, when in my trajectory here working at UMD, acknowledge that many of our indigenous American Indian colleagues, they are the ones that pretty much are, have started this questioning of asking about creating change here at UMD. Mm-hmm. And I really respect the work that they have done. Mm-hmm. You know, Ruth Myers, an amazing woman. When I was a student, she connected with me right away. That she was another person that always asked me, how are you doing? Mm-hmm. Where are you living? Do you have food to eat? I mean, things that sometimes, you know, I have amazing faculty and mentors, but she was always asking about how I was doing.
Sure.
Did I have a place to live? Did I have food? You know, so did I have a job? So that was, I want to make sure I acknowledge that there is many other people that I think we don't have the time to talk about their contributions to make this campus a better place for everyone.
Part of what I'm hearing too, Susanna, is the even what was helpful to you was being seen as a whole person, not just your academics, but do you have food? How are you? And you're, it's more than that, is you're a whole person. You're an immigrant and you're, and there's so much more than that.
Yes, a mother, a sister, a colleague, a friend, you know, as we complex, there's a lot of complexities to it.
Mm-hmm. I'm hoping we'll come back to some of your personal story. I mean, as you know, in our co-chair of Campus Climate Together, that this podcast really is about allowing an opportunity to get to know people more, their stories. In this world of tweets, it's there's so much more to a story, and just really wanting to have an opportunity to go into depth with different issues, different conversations, and people. And so you are one of those people that comes to mind when we talk about just the complexity of a beautiful, rich, and deep story that UMD can be really proud to have you here and fortunate to have you on campus. So, but let's shift a little bit to kind of getting to your current role, which is assistant to the chancellor, is quite the role. Kind of what you do in that role, the current Campus Climate Initiative really came about in its structure with Chancellor Black's coming. How did that come to be?
Well, when he accepted the position at UMD, there was a committee forum where he asked to put together reports on areas where some of our strengths and challenges. And one was, of course, looking at the issues of equity and diversity. And a group of us met with him and put out together a report. And so he made that as one of his first priorities. I mean, he hadn't even started the job when he agreed to participate on a social justice leadership training for senior administrators. And I know we invited faculty and some key partners, and I know that you participated in that initial training.
Yeah, I was fortunate to be part of that.
Yes, and so I think that was a powerful experience where it was an opportunity for everyone on across campus to come together. And but it was only, you know, 2.5 days, but it was really a way to see where we were as a campus and some of the challenges. Mm-hmm. And then he asked Dr. Billensai, at that time, she was a professor of chemistry, but also she was in a position as a senior administrator, to If we could give him some recommendations on looking at best practices across the country. Mm-hmm. So Dr. Belensai and I, and we looked at different institutions. We probably looked at more than 25 institutions, and what the structure that we have, and what we heard from our colleagues was, make sure that when you're doing this work, it's not just landed in one office, mm-hmm. or one person. Mm-hmm. You need to create a structure where people feel empowered, where everyone has an ownership on the work of equity and diversity. So we decided to, as a combination of different, the structure or different institutions, and that's what we landed on doing a recommendation that we wanted to create unit change teams. Mm-hmm. So every college created a unit change team. Vice chancellors have their own unit change teams. Right now we have currently around 15. Okay. I think we started with close to 20. Hmm. We invited also our partners in pharmacy and medical school. And so the structure became creating unit change teams where there's a charge from Chancellor Black to deans and vice chancellors and directors, depending on who overseeing the unit change team, that then select a chair or co-chair that then come together. We get together once a month, mm-hmm. to learn about what is the work that they're doing in their own units, and then being able to make recommendations to the campus climate leadership. And during that time with Dr. Belensai, we acted as co-chairs. And I think that gave us a really great balance on the work. And during that time, we made some good recommendations. We know we created a campus climate response team. Mm-hmm. That was one of the things that came in the report as a challenge, that many people felt that when they file a complaint or there was a race incident, bias incident, that the institution didn't do anything. And so we looked, again, another best practices about what other people were doing, and so created the Campus Climate Response Team. Mm-hmm. We have looked at faculty evaluations, performance improvement, on making sure that in performance evaluations there was a piece on equity and diversity. Mm-hmm. So the creation of campus climate started before we even started talking about a strategic plan.
Yeah, yeah. Which became goal two of our strategic plan.
Which became goal two of our strategic plan.
Right. So really what I'm hearing is that real intentional work at what you talked about, the inclusive excellence of, mm-hmm. infusing equity, diversity, inclusion, and social justice into everywhere, into performance, mm-hmm. evals, into, mm-hmm. recruiting, into the curriculum. It really is a brilliant structure. And as someone who, I was co-chair of the College of Education and Human Service Professions Unit Change Team, mm-hmm. before I was in this role. And it was a complex and sometimes confusing structure.
Yeah.
And yet really the more that I understood it, the more sense it made in terms of it is complex because the work is so complex.
Yes. And it's a work that you cannot just put a check mark and it's done.
Yeah.
Because you always have to come back and assess the work that you're doing. So you, mm-hmm. could create a plan, for example, of how are we going to increase our number of underrepresented students? So how we're going to create a more inclusive, menu for the dining services. Sometimes, mm. some people don't think, but if we are recruiting students that come from all over the world, that have different dietary needs, mm-hmm. And even our own students. So it looks very different in every place. And I feel like every year we have to come back and see, is this working? Is this actually creating change?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's one of the challenges that we try to create change in a structure. And I think as you have seen this a lot, that we always trying to change the people, but not the structure. So how can we change the structure if we know that it's not working, mm-hmm. To be able to actually create change? I think we create institutions of higher education I remember taking a class in the history of higher education, and I can't remember the name of my professor, but the first thing he said, institutions of higher education are so complex and sometimes so dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. And then I am like, well, yeah, and we continue to try to create change, but we are not, and I think it's very difficult to be able to look at the structure and say, how can we change it? Mm-hmm.
Maybe we had the same professor along the way. I remember hearing that higher education and religious institutions are often the hardest and slowest to change.
Yes. So. And I think I think sometimes that's what is sometimes difficult, because mm-hmm. sometimes we have students and they're saying, I mean, they're like, we need to change A, B, C, D. And they're putting yes, I agree 100% with you. This mm-hmm. is not functioning. This is not working. And they get very frustrated when they say, I can't believe it. That is 2 years and we haven't done this. Yeah. Or it's a year and we haven't changed this. So
yeah. What an interesting tension you hold, that having been here for so long, mm-hmm. even as a student and grad student and now staff and faculty, of seeing the long view and what's changed, and yet working with students who are here for 4 years is such a short amount of time, mm-hmm. and dealing with their frustrations at the pace of the change, mm-hmm. and holding both of those.
But it's also trying to educate them about how this process, you know, there's different pieces that mm-hmm. need to put together. I remember when we were working with the Queer and Ally Student Union for making sure that we had gender inclusive restrooms. Mm-hmm. They did their homework. They came back with a letter like, here's all the bathrooms. Here's all the bathrooms that we believe could be changed tomorrow in mm-hmm. every building. But we needed to go back and say, yes, thank you for doing all that, and we want to work with you. But then we had to involve our partners in facilities management, and then we realized that there is some code that we couldn't change some of the bathrooms as easy as we wanted to.
Sure. Building codes, yeah.
Yeah, and but out of that, we came out with a recommendation that as we're moving forward, every new building that was being built at UMD will have inclusive restrooms. Hmm. Any new remodeling must look and have to include inclusive gender inclusive restroom. So,
yeah, I know the older I get and the more I get into administrative type positions, realizing like, oh, it's more than that. Oh, there's a lot more to the story that we don't always hear. Where would you see like the biggest struggle? Thinking about on campus and our campus climate work, where's the biggest need? Where's the biggest stuck part?
One of the challenges is I think sometimes we are not willing. This is the policy. This is the way we have done it. Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes becomes a barrier of can we look. I understand that higher education historically, this is the structure that was created, but why can we be creative to be able to change it? Mm-hmm. And where structure could be a barrier. We are part of a larger system that also creates other barriers. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes we do have great ideas that we think could be, that we said, well, we could create this change. And then we're told, well, but that's the policy and we cannot change the policy, or we need to make sure that it's a region's policy. So there's all these layers mm-hmm. that I think we're on the structure sometimes is what it goes against this kind of work.
Right, yeah. And as we've talked about in some of the work we've done also, this notion of looking at the history of higher education mm-hmm. and who it was created for and by really creates a culture and policies and procedures where some are advantaged and were mm-hmm. Invited and others are disadvantaged and literally weren't invited mm-hmm. and overtly excluded. Yeah. And so I think that's part of maybe that struggle you're talking about, where we really do need to change the structures because they weren't created for all. And so the only way to make them really inclusive, that's what I love about inclusion as a separate goal area than diversity, is that without those shifts in structures and systems, we cannot be more diverse. It's like we have this path. We live out in the country, and there's an old railroad bed that was turned into recreation. And it's like, all travel welcome, foot, bikes, but the rocks are these big, huge boulders that really only ATVs can safely use and snowmobiles in the winter. And so it's one of those, you can say, oh, all are welcome, but is the very foundation of it, like, yeah, you're sure you're welcome to use that path, but it's dangerous. It's not very accessible to you. And so thinking of those examples across our institution and really needing to chip away at those. And as you said, redesign the institution if we really want to be more diverse.
Yes. Well, and you know, the gaps that we have with the equity gap, and who actually has access to be able to continue into higher education. I think that's another big challenge that we have. And if we look at our educational system and our own state, you know, the state of Minnesota is dramatically changing. The demographics are changing. And so we really need to be able to have these conversations with all of our colleagues across campus, from enrollment to curriculum, and our K-12 partners, you know, on how do we continue to make sure that our institutions are accessible to everyone, and that and acknowledging that our demographics are changing. And so if we want the state of Minnesota to succeed and to be able to improve their economy, we do need to invest in education. And I think sometimes we tend to put them separate, you know, like politics, economics, education, they're all like different and separate entities, I'm sorry, and they're all interconnected.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I would say the personal is the personal is also political. You know, there's so many connections to it.
We do a number of trainings together, so I've heard you say this often about just that it's. And I know people on the radio can't see that, but I'm pointing to my heart that it's head work, it's intellectual work, but it's also heart and soul work in a way that is often neglected. And I love how you bring that into the work that you do also.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be part of this podcast, and I'm hopefully looking forward to listen to the rest of your interviews.
Yeah, thanks. You can listen to more episodes of UMD's It's More Than That podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. Visit d.umn.edu/campusclimate to find additional information on our episodes and more about what the University of Minnesota Duluth is doing to build a better, more welcoming campus community for all. And you can sign our pledge and work with us on your own personal journey.